This week we wonder why Jim Cramer is so bullish on Netflix. Looking at the data, it sure looks to us like it's going to be a really rough year for the company. Let's get started.
This week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media joins me as a happy 49ers fan. Right, Colin? How you doing?
I am very happy. This is a big bonus for us this year after we did so poorly last year to be actually in the Super Bowl. Wow. And wait a minute. Didn't you say about this time last year that it's basically somebody playing the Patriots always in the Super Bowl?
That sounds like a slight exaggeration, but we won't go there. But the odds were certainly in the favor of the Patriots. But alas, they didn't make it. So you can keep smiling, and we'll see if you're still smiling 2 weeks from now when we're recording. But in the meantime, congrats. It was a great game for the Niners, great game for the Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a great Super Bowl. Well, whatever happens, I'll be smiling that it's been a great season. But I don't know. I think our friends at Netflix are probably still smiling. They turned in some interesting results. You wrote about it. I wrote about it. We're going to talk about it today. Why don't you brief us on how they did?
Yeah, I'm not sure that they'd necessarily be smiling, Colin, but they might be smiling about the fact that Jim Cramer still likes the stock and said last night on TV that he saw nothing in their Q4 report that made him less of a believer, which is absolutely just incredible to me that somebody who can look at the Netflix numbers would say such a thing. But that's a completely side issue. Let's talk about the numbers themselves for a second. So, quick overview here, and then we'll get into things in more depth. They reported Q4 19 in full year. Q4 gained 8.8 million. That was ahead of the 7.6 million forecast. But the big news was that in the U.S., which is now part of the what's known as the UCAN or the U.S. and Canada region, in the U.S. they gained just 420,000 subscribers. And just to put a little more context around that, that is by far the lowest U.S. sub addition growth that they've had since Q4 2011, which of course was the Quickster debacle. And the first time they've dropped below a million subscriber additions in the U.S. in the seasonally strong Q4 since then. And it is down, the 420,000 is down 79% versus just 2 years ago, Q4 17, when Netflix added 1.98 million U.S. subscribers. So that is a pretty, pretty steep drop off in a pretty, pretty short period of time. And for sure, some people are going to say that the law of large numbers is against Netflix. And I think that's fair to some extent. They said that the two reasons for the drop-off were probably due to recent price changes and U.S. competitive launches. The price changes are a reference to the May 2019 $2 increase from 11 to 13 on the standard plan, which is the most popular plan. And that no doubt caused a retention issue and a churn issue. Of course, Netflix no longer breaks out churn, so we have no idea what that number actually was. But that price increase did go through 5 months ago, so to keep talking about price increases at this stage seems like a little bit of a stretch to me. Not to mention that in Q4, Netflix launched The Irishman, which was by far the most talked about and star-studded movie of 2019. And of course, Netflix's biggest swing at the movie industry to date. So that was the argument on the churn side. And on the acquisition side, we all know that Disney Plus and Apple TV launched in Q4. But if you rewind the tape to October 16th, when Netflix did its Q3 release, and it devoted five full paragraphs to talking about upcoming competition, the strongest statement that it would make about upcoming competition at that point was that there may be some modest headwind in our near-term growth, and we have tried to factor that into our guidance. So in Q3, that was the most impactful thing that they would say about the upcoming competition. Here we go, flash forward 3 months. And in Q4, when they come in at 420,000 versus the 600,000 that they had forecast, again, factoring in the, quote, modest headwind from the, the modest headwind into our near-term growth, now it's become one of the top two reasons, main reasons for why it slowed. So why, that's a pretty big change about in sentiment. But all of that in terms of Q4 is actually nothing compared to what is coming in 2020. So why don't I pause at that point so you can talk a little more about what happened internationally in Q4 19, and then let's flash forward to talking about what's coming in 2020.
Right. Yeah. I just want to make a quick comment on the price increase, Will. I think it is pretty reasonable to attribute some of the drop-off due to the price increase. I went back and looked at, if you look at what happened in Q3 growth was half what it was 1 year earlier. And similarly with Q2, but actually Q4 was a third of what we saw. So there was clearly something extra going on there. And I think, you know, that is very definitely the impact of Disney Plus. And look, we talked about this. I was convinced that Disney Plus was going to have an impact when Netflix said that they weren't going to have an impact, that there was room for everybody. You know, one purchase decision does affect another one, and that's clearly what's happened here.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, we've talked before on podcasts about Netflix that the new competition was going to have a meaningful impact. My point is that Netflix would never concede it. They never, even as recently as 3 months ago, they would only still characterize it as a modest headwind. And so they kind of never recognized what you and I and lots of other people were saying about competition until the competition actually blew into town and affected their numbers in a meaningful way. That was my only point.
Yeah. And okay, I got it. But, you know, there was one other thing that they said about this. To divert us from the international, we'll get there in just a second. One of the things that they repeated in the call several times afterwards was that they were asked about the impact of Disney Plus on viewing in Netflix. And the standard response was most of the growth in the future is coming out of linear TV. And I think that's naive to say that. I think Disney Plus is impacting Netflix across its business in engagement and in subscriber gains and in its and Netflix ability to increase prices. So, you know, it's a very, very broad impact, and that impact is getting more so based on entries of things like HBO Max and Peacock, and there's lots of competition. But anyway, let's talk about the regions. I'll give very, very quick summary. This is the first time that Netflix has reported all of the regional information. They said that they were going to do this. They gave a sort of snapshot last time, but they actually gave a fully fleshed out results back to 2017. And I had a chance to sort of process that. So I'm going to give you the top line of what I found there. So US and Canada, which they call UCAN, this was definitely the weakest growing region in terms of subscribers. However, it's delivering the highest ARPU. So the region added a little under 3 million paying customers, but 2 million of those came in the first quarter. So really, nothing happened much in UCAN in the following three quarters. But they did get excellent ARPU growth, and that's because of the price increase here. And they say that the average revenue per unit is about $13.22 in Q4. And as I say, that is considerably higher than everywhere else. So that's why I think, you know, say what you like, US and Canada is the biggest region. Let me say, I think it's something like 40% of all subscribers. I'll give you those numbers accurately in just a second.
All right, well, tell us more about the other three regions, Colin.
I will. So EMEA, That's Europe, Middle East, and Asia. Europe, Middle East, and Africa. Look, this is growing really, really fast. It's the second biggest region. They finished with 51.8 million EMEA subscribers. That's versus 67.7 million UCAN subscribers. Growing really fast. They added 14 million paying customers in 2019. They're on pace, I think, to pass UCAN, if they keep this up, in 2021, not next year, but the year afterwards. ARPU is second highest, $10.51. So a really, really important region, could become Netflix's most important region very quickly. Latin America, well, this is a funny one. Latin America, they launched very early in 8 years ago. And they're continuing to see pretty good growth over the last year. Paying customers increased 5.3 million to put them at, 31.4 million subscribers in total. But, you know, I got to say, this has been a slow burn. LATAM has been a slow burn. And they really, over that period, they've really not been able to increase prices. So I looked at ARPU and it's only gone up 30 cents in 3 years. So, and it's pretty low, $8.18 versus EMEA, which is $10, and the US, which is 13. Asia Pac, well, it is growing really fast. That's the big news there. 53% year over year growth for Q4. And they have 16.2 million subscribers there. But they have, Netflix has real problems in this region, and they've introduced a low cost mobile only plan, and they've now released it in three regions, India, Malaysia, and Indonesia now have these low cost plans. And I got to tell you, it's having a pretty bad impact on ARPU. ARPU is $9.07, but it fell in 2019, 12 cents. And I got a feeling it's going to fall even further. So, you know, smallest number of subscribers, growing the fastest for sure. But I think it won't be contributing a huge amount to Netflix bottom line for quite some time. So those are the four regions, Will.
So, Colin, I just want to make sure we recap the kind of super headline from the other regions. You're saying that the growth rate, the quarterly growth rate in Q4 in the non-UCAN regions, the growth rate in Q4 was lower in Q4 19 than it was in Q4 18.
That's correct, Will. So, yeah, if you look at growth, year-over-year growth, that's between Q4 and Q4. So looking at 19 Q4 versus 18 Q4, the growth in Europe was 37%, in LATAM 21%, and in APAC 53%. But in 18 Q4 versus 17 Q4, it was much higher. So it was 45% in Europe versus 37%, 32% in Latin America versus 20%, and 63% in APAC versus 3%, 53% this last quarter. So it really, we are seeing a sort of deceleration in growth in all regions. At least that's what my numbers tell me.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I think also. So we talked about UCAN, we talked about the three regions in 19. I think now we talk about what's most interesting here, which is what's likely to happen in 2020, right?
You bet. So,
I kick us off, or?
Yeah, sure. So, I think I want to focus on revenue, Will.
I said, shall I kick us off? And then you started talking.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm teasing. Go ahead if you want to go ahead.
Well, we talked a lot about subs, and I'll let you talk about subs. But I think Netflix is in sort of double jeopardy here with the revenue. I think they're going to see a big impact in revenue growth. They have had a really, really strong revenue growth now for quite a long time. And for example, in the last quarter, let's see, revenue, 19 Q4 revenue was 5.5 billion. That's a 31% increase over 18 Q4. And let me tell you, they've been turning in that sort of performance on a pretty regular basis. But I think they're really going to get squeezed now. We saw in the regions that the ARPU, the ability to increase ARPU, has really been curtailed in LATAM and in APAC. And I think Disney now is making it really difficult for Netflix to raise prices in 2020. So Disney's going to hold the line on Disney Plus, I think, for the rest of 2020. And that really restricts their ability to raise prices. So I think we're going to, so you're going to be hit by two things in revenue. One is the fact that they can't raise prices. And two is the fact that they're really going to grow much slower, I think, particularly in the US and in Europe, because Disney Plus is just beginning to roll out in Europe. So we're going to see slower growth in their two biggest regions than we've even seen this year. So I think they're going to really be hit twice with this revenue problem. So I think it's going to be a really difficult year for them.
All right, so let me pick up on the second issue, which is the subscriber issue, and just put some numbers around it. Just quickly to take a step back, in Q2 19, they lost 130,000 subscribers in the U.S. That was a real shocker to Netflix observers, how they lost subs then. I remember thinking to myself, boy, if they lost 130,000 subs U.S. in Q2 19, when there was no Disney Plus in the market, there was no Peacock in the market, there was no Apple TV Plus in the market, there was no HBO Max in the market, what is it going to be like in Q2 20 when all these alternatives are in the market? And that was before we really, never mind even knowing they're going to come to market, that's before we knew, as you just pointed out, that Disney Plus was practically going to give everything away at $7 a month, or that Peacock would raise the stakes even further by introducing their price at $5 a month with ads, just 5 minutes of ads per hour. So we'd see this, essentially the gift that keeps on giving to viewers of ever cheaper, less intrusive video services. So that's before all that. So my attitude was they're going to lose, before this week's report, my attitude was they're going to lose subscribers in Q2 20, and it's likely going to be a multiple of the 130,000 that they lost in Q2 19. Now I think, given the forecast that they've offered up, I think there's at least a 50-50 chance that they're going to lose subscribers in the first quarter of 2020 in UCAN, which would have been absolutely unthinkable as recently as just 2 years ago. And the simple math goes like this. They've offered a forecast globally of 7 million net subscriber additions. In Q1 of 19, they added 7.09 million in the three non-UCAN regions. So in other words, to net to the 7 million, that means that in the three non-UCAN regions, they would actually have to gain about 100,000 fewer subscribers than they did in Q1 19. All right. Now, what you just pointed out was that the growth rates in the three non-UCAN regions have all decelerated. That's for sure. Growth rates, but they're still growing very strongly. So there's good reason to believe that in Q1 19, the party will keep rolling in the three non-UCAN regions, and at a minimum, they're going to gain more than the 7 million subscribers that they gained in Q1 19. So every subscriber over 7 million that they gain in those three non-UCAN regions means that they have to lose a subscriber in UCAN in order to net to the forecast of 7 million global that Netflix has made. So to me, that says that either Netflix is being incredibly conservative, like off the charts conservative in this global forecast, or again, there's a 50-50 chance at least that they're going to lose subscribers in UCAN in Q1 20, which would to me again be just an incredible turnabout from as recently as 2 years ago, even as recently as Q1 19 UCAN. So I don't know. It's all uncharted territory to me, and I don't think the market has yet really digested what Netflix is, what the math of what Netflix has communicated to it.
Right, right, and you know, clearly our friend Jim Cramer hasn't, because if he'd been looking at the numbers in his detail, I don't think he'd be quite as bullish as he seems to be. But I got to say, you know, so okay, look. I think we both agree that it's going to be a pretty rough year for Netflix this year. No question about that. Both from the perspective of revenue and of subscriber gains, and of course those two are so closely related. But I've got to say, the long run for Netflix, I honestly believe that they do continue to have a solid business and remain in the catbird seat in SVOD in the world, and they have assets that other people simply do not have. So for example, if you look at the relationships that Netflix has built up with pay TV operators around the world, particularly in Europe, nobody else has the breadth of those relationships that Netflix has. They just signed somebody up this week. They just renewed a deal with Sky for their Sky Q, where they're actually more tightly coupled in with Sky Q, which is the leading satellite service in the UK. This is the way that they're going to keep going. It gets Netflix under the noses of people who have yet to really commit to OTT TV, and allows them to start to watch in an environment that they're very comfortable. So I think that strategy is really paying dividends for them. I think, although I'm you know, worried about the average revenue per unit that they're earning in Asia, they simply had to introduce a low cost plan. They're getting their butts kicked by services like iFlix and Hotstar in that region, and the only way they could really make progress was with a low cost mobile plan. So they had to do it, but it really does put off when Asia will be, I think, a meaningful contributor to the bottom line within Netflix. So, but that said, you know, I think I'm still very optimistic for the service. I think it's going to continue to do well and cement its place at the top. This year, though, a rough year.
Well, I mean, Colin, I guess the question is, you know, how do you define doing well? Is Netflix always going to be, you know, the top or one of the top SVOD services? Absolutely. I mean, they're already far, far ahead of everybody else. So the prospect of them completely going off a cliff is very unlikely.
Right.
It's just a question of, you know, what are the growth characteristics going to be like of the business? What are the profit margins characteristics going to be of the business? What are the competitive dynamics going to be? I mean, when you talk about the Sky distribution and, you know, this and that, yes, yes, yes. But all that is ultimately factored into whatever, number one, their forecasts are, and number two, their actuals are for sub growth. And, you know, the numbers are what they are. They, you know, they're talking 7 million for Q1. Net of doing all the deals and distribution and everything else, they're coming in at 7 million. And I think just the last thing that I would say about the whole question about the business is that I wrote probably a month ago or so that I think there are really compelling reasons for Netflix to launch a lower priced ad supported tier, just like we've seen from Hulu, CBS All Access, and now Peacock. Soon HBO Max, and no doubt soon Disney Plus as well. That's just the way the world is going, and everyone's going to have at least an ad-supported tier, if not be strictly ad-supported. Being subscriber-only is simply not the optimal way to monetize your content assets, because there are going to be people that either don't want to pay the current rate, or they don't want to pay, or they're willing to take they're not able to pay the current rate without ads because they can't afford it, or they simply have had enough subscriptions and are willing to tolerate ads in exchange. Anyway, point is that they've got a lot of good reasons to go down to a lower tier. And on this past quarter Q4 report, we heard yet again from Netflix that they have no interest in pursuing an ad-supported tier. And the reasons given were at best nonsensical. I mean, it's reasons like, we don't think that we can invest in data at a level that would be competitive with what Amazon, Google, and Facebook are doing. Never mind that Hulu is probably going to do $1 billion in ads this year, that connected TVs are now in 60% or 70% of homes. Never mind that brands across the country and across the world recognize that linear audience is on the downslide, and they have to shift spending to CTV if they want to make sure their brands are in front of audiences, especially younger audiences. Okay, so every reason argues for why Netflix should be introducing the ad-supported lower price tier, but they're still resisting it. And ultimately, what they're doing is they're undervaluing their content assets because they're not monetizing them to the fullest extent that they could be monetized if they had a lower priced ad-supported tier. And ultimately, it's some type of a religious argument. They just simply will not accept the world the way that it is and are sticking by this idea that the only way to monetize their assets is through SVOD. And that is just absolutely, in my mind, leaving money on the table. So, you have to look at Netflix, the business, in that context as well.
Well, you could be right. I tell you what, a rough revenue year in 2020, that maybe that'll get them singing a different tune in Q1 of 2021.
We'll see, Colin. All right. In the meantime, all we can do is root against the 49ers, right? Sorry, for the 49ers.
Oh gosh. Yeah, it should be a great game. Should be a
All
great
right,
game.
Colin. Enough for Netflix today.
You bet.
Great conversation. Thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. And we'll see you all again next week.